Hello, and thank you for tuning in to The Matrix is Real. My name is Neo. Today, I wanted to talk about a very important topic given what's going on in Gaza and involving Israel. I see these two terms used interchangeably, and I feel it's by design, but there is a fundamental difference between Zionism and Judaism. And it's something that most people don't seem to understand. Kanye West got into some deep trouble, so to speak. What was it, about a year ago, when he went off on a rant on Twitter, basically lambasting the Jews, saying they control everything and they're to blame, blah 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 blah. And it's not so much that he was wrong; it's just he was using the incorrect term. And that's what I'm going to explain today. So Judaism is a religious faith. It's a religion. Zionism, on the other hand, is a secular political ideology that did not exist prior to the late 1800s. And it wasn't until after World War II that Zionism began being embraced by the mainstream collective thought. And that was in part, again, done by design, but also the other part was collective guilt over the Holocaust of World War II. So the first part of what I want to get into is when people say, Israel has a right to exist, Israel has a right to defend itself. Number one, Israel does not have a right to exist. If you want to go by the Jewish holy books, the Torah, the Bible, the Old Testament and the Bible, explicitly actually forbid the creation of a secular, non-messianic Jewish state. In other words, the reason why the Jews overall don't look at Jesus very favorably is Christians hold him up as the Messiah. But according to the Jewish faith, the Messiah, number one, was a human. And number two, the Messiah could not die, because the Messiah's entire role was to be used by God to facilitate the restoration of the tribes of Israel, and basically to bring about a new earth, so to speak. So Jesus, by definition, couldn't be the Messiah if he died. So we have to look to then the Torah and the Old Testament as to answering, what does God say on the fact, and how are Jews supposed to live? I read a great book called Explaining 100 Years of Jewish Opposition to Zionism. It's by an author by the name of Yaakov, I think it's Yaakov Rabkin or Rabin. Let me double check. Where is it? There it is. Yaakov Rabkin. I was right the first time. Basically, for a long time, I had seen images before, images of basically super Orthodox Jews with their black suits and their hats with that little curl that they have. And I'd seen images of these people protesting against the Zionist government of Israel. And back when I had first seen this a few years ago, it didn't really make much sense to me. It almost was like, when a computer freezes, my brain kind of froze, and I'm like, what am I looking at? How is it that Jews are basically protesting against themselves? So at the time, I decided not to do any further digging on it. It didn't really seem relevant at the time to me. But in light of what is going on today, I realized and recognized my ignorance and decided to educate myself on the issue. So I read this book, and since reading it, I just completely worldview shift. And I'll get right into it. So these are the verses that I have found through my own digging that forbid not only the state of Israel itself, but actually as well the policies of the state of Israel. Psalms 127:1. Unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. The first question in my mind: who built the state of Israel? Ben Gurion is the founder of Israel, so it wasn't God. It was a political movement spearheaded by Zionism, and in it with help from the British government, the Balfour Declaration, namely. But basically, the British helped the Zionists create what we now refer to as the state of Israel. If God didn't build it, then who did build it? I look at it as we live in a polar world, and yes, there are shades of gray on many a host of different issues, but fundamentally, we either have stuff that originates from God or does not. And if it doesn't originate from God, where does it originate from? The obvious answer is the devil, Satan. Jeremiah 27:22, they will be taken to Babylon, and there they will remain until the day I come for them, declares the Lord. Then I will bring them back and restore them to this place. In other words, Jews have been forced to live in exile from the promised land. And many Orthodox Jews say the reason for this is because Jews have historically strayed from obedience and observance of the Torah and become more secularized. So they've embraced the secular world that we now live in, you know, where men can be women and women can be men and men can menstruate and blah, 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 blah. Like all the ills of society. It stems, in my opinion, from straying from God and embracing the secular, you know, the of man. Isaiah chapter 11, verses 11 and 12. In that day, the Lord will reach out his hand a second time to reclaim the surviving remnant of his people from Assyria, from Lower Egypt, from Upper Egypt, from Cush, from Elam, from Babylonia, from Hamath, and from the islands of the Mediterranean. He will raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles of Israel. He will assemble the scattered people of Judah from the four quarters of the earth. This verse means that the Jews that are living in Israel can only be restored to the promised land by God. Thus, the Messiah is the only one that can bring about this radical transformation of the Jewish people. I should note also, you notice the word Israel there. I've read a lot of Talmudic scholars and rabbis and you know, basically experts in the Torah. And these experts, all of them, you know, say that Israel, when referred to in the Old Testament and the Torah, is not referring to a landmass or what we think of when we think of Israel today. Israel, when used in the holy books, is actually referring to the community of Jews worldwide. So that's an important distinction, because a lot of people read that Israel didn't exist until 1948. So obviously the Bible, the Torah, it can't be referring to that Israel, because that Israel simply didn't exist. So continuing on, in the Torah, there's something called the three oaths. This was given to the Jews, and basically how to live amongst the host nations in exile. The first oath was not to return en masse to the land of Israel. The second was not to rebel against the nations that they resided in. And the third was the nations that they resided in should not subjugate the Jews exceedingly. So The Jews were expelled from the promised land with the destruction of the second temple, and they were basically to remain living in exile until the Messiah returns. Deuteronomy 16:20, whenever we hear, you know, well, Israel is just doing what's right, and they have a right to self-defense, they have a right to exist, blah 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 blah. Deuteronomy 16:20 says, justice shall you pursue. I don't know about you, but in the United States of America, most people, you know, cry and weep and mourn the loss of children, you know, when there's a mass school shooting, you know, and usually, not to say that any loss of life for children is acceptable, but usually in these mass shootings, you know, you have anywhere, I would say, on average, between 5 and 40 in a mass shooting, which, you know, those are innocent lives lost and that should never happen. I don't like to see children die. I don't like to see anyone die, but especially children. But in Gaza, in a span of just under 4 months, we have seen officially almost 15,000 children dead, murdered at the hands of the Israelis. And that figure is misleading, because number one, the government in Gaza has already admitted that they have lost the capability to accurately count the dead. So they're kind of going on estimates in part. Number two is they are not counting the people that have been crushed to death and killed under the rubble as officially dead, because they have no, you know, proof that these people are dead, in fact. So I've heard some estimates, you know, the figures that we're seeing could be multiples higher. You know, if we're talking about 30,000 dead, roughly, Palestinians, that figure could be 60,000. It could be 90,000. We don't know for sure. And then the last thing is they're not counting the people that are dying due to starvation, due to disease. They're specifically counting people that were killed by the Israeli Defense Force. So that's not justice. That's not justice, obviously. Jeremiah 5:25, your wrongdoings have kept these away. Your sins have deprived you of good. In other words, the Jews need to continue to living in exile, because life is the way it is because of what the Jews, not in spite of what they have done. Zechariah 3:2, the Lord rebukes thee, O adversary. Even the Lord who has chosen Jerusalem rebukes thee. Right now, the state of Israel, you know, obviously Jerusalem lies in Israel. And this verse basically says, you know, even though this, it may be the promised land, you are rebuked by God because you're an enemy of God. First Samuel 2:9 says, for it is not by strength that a man prevails. This one addresses the aggressive militarism of the Zionist state of Israel. True strength is showing meekness, is showing humility, is showing grace, is showing peace to all men, because all men are of God. God created all of us. And this goes back to the eye for an eye doctrine. That's what Jesus, his teachings were so revolutionary, is that he overturned, it wasn't just according to the Jews, the world had long operated under the eye for an eye doctrine, but it was Jesus that was arguably the first that said, this is not the way that we need to live. And it's interesting, Jesus as a Jew, because he was a Jew, he said in his own words, he came not to abolish the law of Moses, but to purify it. So in other words, the Jews, just like today, many of them, were living incorrectly and counter to the will of God. Continuing, Leviticus 18:28. So let not the land spew you out for defiling it, as it has spewed out the nation that came before you. Jews are living in exile because of their sin and their refusal to obey the Torah and obey the laws that God has given them. Leviticus 20:22, you shall faithfully observe all my laws and all my regulations, lest the land to which I bring you to settle in spew you out. Again, Orthodox Jews that oppose Zionism say this. They say, the reason why we're living in exile is not because of the bad people that kicked us out, it's because of our own actions. Deuteronomy 8, verses 11 through 14 and 17. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase, and all you have multiplied, then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You may say to yourself, my power and strength of my hands have produced wealth for me. But remember, the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your ancestors, as it is today. This is Zionism explained 100% today. The Israelis, I don't call the people of Israel Jews, because most of them, even though they quote identify as Jews, they are not living and practicing Judaism. They're not. If they were, groups like, Jews Against Zionism would not exist, or a lot of these other groups that publicly condemn the policies and the actions of the Israeli state. So I refer to them as Israelis. Israelis felt beaten to the ground, understandably so, after World War II. And since Zionist education has basically raised an entire generations of Jews, of Israelis, to believe in their own pride and in their own strength, and basically to abandon God as their ultimate source of protection. So like the verse says, after you've had a lot of success, you will start to become proud and you will forget that it was God that gave you the ability to do what you've done. A lot of Israelis and pro-Zionists want to accuse anyone that has, you know, legitimate criticism of Israel as Holocaust deniers or as Nazis. The irony, though, is that not only is the Star of David today becoming the modern-day swastika, but further, the Nazis and the Zionists actually share three common ideals. The first is that the Jews were not a religious group, but a distinct nation and ethnicity. Again, you can be descendants of Abraham, but it was, I believe, John the Baptist that said, don't claim to be sons of Abraham. If God wanted to create more sons of Abraham, he could do it out of these rocks. In other words, the fact that you are descendants of these people does not make you Jewish. It's your actions. Are you living as Jews? The second is that Jews could never integrate into the countries in which they lived. This was shown to be false. The Jews have integrated throughout history in various different places. Ironically enough, after World War II, nobody wanted the Jews. The Americans didn't want them. People in South America didn't want them. Europe obviously didn't want them. So where did they settle? They settled in Palestine and the Arab countries, which took them in with open arms. And if you talk to any of these pious Jews that are observant of the Torah, they will tell you, and they'll show pictures. The Jews and the Arabs nations and the Arabs living there lived in harmony for centuries prior to the creation of the Israeli state. The last one is that the sole solution to the Jewish problem for the Jews was to leave and to resettle elsewhere. That's Hitler right then and there. You want to condemn Nazism? You want to condemn Hitler? Hitler basically said, we need to get all of them out. And today we're just doing the opposite. We need to get all them from out to in this small piece of land that was already occupied, that there's a lot of hostilities, because it's not that Arab nations or Arabs or Palestinians hate Jews. They hate the Zionist policies that, unfortunately, a lot of these Israelis are complicit in carrying out. Proverbs 16:32. Whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. This is again talking about the passivity and the meekness of Jews. They are supposed to, just like Jesus said, turn the other cheek. It's better to be in control of oneself than to go in and conquest and take over an entire city. So everything that the Israeli government is doing today is going against Proverbs 16:32. Deuteronomy 11:16. Take heed not to be lured away to serve other gods and bow to them. Statism, I tell people all the time, statism has become a religion. Even in the United States of America, how many people pay taxes even though they morally object to the policies of the government? How many people follow laws that they morally object to? It was Martin Luther King said, it is our responsibility, our obligation to disobey unjust laws. As true followers of God, one of the only things that the Jews are allowed by God to engage in violent resistance is if they are forced to submit and serve and worship a false god. Proverbs chapter 15 verses 1 and also chapter 24 verse 29. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Do not say, I'll do to them as they have done to me. I will repay the man according to his work. This again goes back to the eye for an eye doctrine, saying, well, when the Jews say, well, it was Hamas that attacked on October 7th, and that's the only reason that we're doing what we're doing. Well, Proverbs says, don't do it to them as they've done to you. Forgive. Be godly. So those are some of the bulk of the verses that I personally have found. But I wanted to continue on and talk about just a lot of the other facts that I have come to learn. David Ben-Gurion, the true founder of the State of Israel, was actually an admirer of of Lenin, I'm sorry, I said Lenin, and the communist takeover in Russia, he said, I quote, "The Great Revolution, the primordial upheaval that would uproot present-day reality, shaking this rotten, decadent society to its very depths." So the founder of Israel was basically a communist. Going back to what was said earlier, and that the Jews could never integrate into society no matter where they lived. Napoleon, it was interesting to learn this, he actually emancipated the Jews, integrated them into society, gave them more rights than they really ever had throughout Europe. And he even offered to return them to Palestine and even rebuild the temple if they would march under his banner. And back then, the pious Jews, which were mostly all of them back then, they said no. They said, we're not going to show allegiance to Napoleon just because he's dangling a carrot in front of us and promising us our Jewish state. They continue to live in exile, which is the godly thing to do. Let's see, going down. Judaic anti-Zionists abhor the nationalistic conceptualization of the Jew, which is peculiar to both Zionism and to the racial anti-Semitism from which the Jews suffered so much in the 20th century. One of the most popular, outspoken adversaries of Zionism is Rabbi Israel Dalm. He was a Polish Jew who lost part of his family in the Shoah, which was the Holocaust, and he came to decry the Zionist enterprise when he migrated first to Israel and later to Britain. Like many others, he affirmed that the Jewish people constitutes neither a racial nor ethnic entity. Their covenant with God, which was given to them on Mount Sinai, makes them unique. It is this covenant, and more specifically their fidelity to it, their obedience to it, rather than their political or military prowess, that alone governs their destiny. In order to infuse the Jews with the idea of becoming a nation, the Zionists must give nationalism precedence over the Torah, because it is known that those who cling to the Torah and the commandments are not likely to change and accept another identity, especially such as is implied in leaving exile by force and redeeming themselves by their own power. Hence, in order to implement their idea, the Zionists must distort the essence of Jewishness in order to get the Jews to assume a different identity. That was by a writer by the name of Revitsky, written in 1996. This was a good one. Tradition likewise instructs Jews to be mindful of the impression they create upon others, even upon those that have persecuted them in the past. Moses, for example, is concerned with how the Jews would be perceived by the Egyptians in Exodus 32:12, even though the Egyptians exploited his people during more than two centuries of slavery. In a deliberate break from Jewish tradition, the Zionist educational system has, from its inception, promoted the qualities of strength, self-affirmation, and combativeness. It teaches young people to disregard the impression that they and the state of Israel that they defend create on the rest of the world. David Ben-Gurion reportedly used to say, "What matters is what the Jews do, not what the Goyim think." Goyim is actually a derogative term that basically refers to non-Jews as, like, you know, lower than dogs. Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, a renowned Talmudic scholar, said, "The Zionists do not drive away the Jews from the Torah in order to get a state. They need a state in order to drive the Jews away from the Torah." According to Israeli intellectual Boaz Arian, Zionism is the negation of Judaism. In its negation of Judaism, the Zionist outlook is often seen as a clean break from Jewish messianic learning. It also is sometimes associated with the messianic activism, reminiscent of an entire history of false messiahs. Theodor Herzl, which was the father of modern political Zionism, in his visit to Jerusalem in 1898, personified this break and, naturally enough, unleashed a storm of criticism. Not only did he transgress the Sabbath, but also ascended the Temple Mount, formerly forbidden to Jews by Jewish law. The Lubavitch Rebbe of the day, which was basically a leading Jewish voice of the day, condemned him categorically. He desecrated the Torah and the mitzvahs in public. He entered the holy city of Jerusalem on Sabbath, and he went to the Temple Mount. Even from a humanistic point of view, he should not have done so. He violated the Sabbath in public in the holy city and in the holiest place of God, whereby he was just doing evil in the eyes of God. His purpose was to emphasize and flaunt their impure and corrupt ideology that Judaism is nationalism. The leader of the Zionists raised the idol of nationalism, which is a rebellion in God and the disbelief in the Torah and the mitzvahs, in, above all places, the palace of God. That was according to a scholar by the name of Schneerson. Jews in Germany, France, Austria, and Great Britain, those countries in which Jews enjoyed full civic roles in society, were virtually unanimous in its rejection of Zionism prior to World War II. So the very countries that Jews basically were the most integrated in society, they categorically rejected Zionism before the Holocaust. Benny Morris actually goes further and explains that the Zionist ideology and practice were necessarily and elementally expansionist. Realizing Zionism meant organizing and dispatching settlement groups to Palestine, each settlement takes root, it actually becomes acutely aware of its isolation and vulnerability, and quite naturally seeks the establishment of new Jewish settlements around it. This would make the original settlement more secure, but the new settlements now become the front line, and they themselves need new settlements to safeguard them. After the Six-Day War, a similar logic would underlie the extension of Israeli settlement into the Golan Heights. So, the illegal Israeli settlements are it's a warfare tactic. And to be a Jewish settler is to have no faith in God, because you recognize the danger of what you're doing. You're basically settling illegally territories that were occupied by other people. And you know that these people are not going to be happy about it. I mean, I ask this question to anyone. How would you feel if somebody just walked into your house and said, "This is mine now"? Your natural reaction would be like, "Get the F out." So these people are acutely aware of the situation they're in, but rather than showing faith to God, knowing what they're doing is righteous, they have to try to grab other Israeli settlers and put them out on the front lines of these settlements so they feel more safe. Israel's military victories also raise new questions among critics of Zionism. How could the impious enjoy such martial success? In contrast to the national religious, who saw the victories as miraculous and thus a sign of divine benevolence, the anti-Zionist Haredim attributed the Israeli victories to the work of Satan. For them, it was inconceivable that God could have aided those they considered to be idolaters. The contradictions were well noted. The victories were either due to divine intervention or the work of Satan, who creates mirages of redemption in order to mislead the just. In this polarized vision, no room has remained for a compromise interpretation. For its detractors, the victories are just other episodes in a continuum of destruction that begins with the rise of Zionism. So that one, it's either God or it's Satan. And just looking at the psychopathic behavior of the IDF and the way they're treating Palestinians, it's obvious they're not godly. Israel's military power has also arguably brought the Israelis neither peace nor security. Obviously, I mean, look at what's happened in the past couple months. Rabbis and generals alike have spoken of the ineffectiveness of the use of force against the Palestinians. The Palestinian tactic of suicide bombing, which they haven't actually done in a long time, but it's actually linked to a verse from Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy 1:44. Then the Amorites who lived in those hills came out against you like so many bees and chased you, and they crushed you at the Hormah in Seir. A guy by the name of Rashi, his commentary is quite specific. Just as the bee that stings the human dies right then and there, so do the Amorites who touch you and die immediately. Rabbi Isaac Ziv Halevi Velvel Solochevik, an innovator in Talmudic studies and eyewitness to the daring attacks of the Israel military, added his own commentary to Rashi's, underlying the futility of going to war with the Arabs. He said, "They," which he means the Zionists, "think that by killing the Arabs they will frighten them, but they will not cease attacking Jews right up to the end. The Arabs are attacking us because heaven has sent them." This to me was like amazing, when how it just completely warped my entire view about the perception of what is happening. The Zionists look at the people resisting them, really, but let's just say attacking, but they're really resisting, attacking them as the enemy. Whereas the pious Jews see these people as God is sending these people as punishment for our straying from the Torah. It's all about a matter of a personal accountability. The Zionists don't want to take accountability for anything. It's everyone else's fault. It's everyone else's fault. They did nothing wrong. Even though you can show them time and time again, they've done nothing wrong in their own minds. And I think that's the difference between true Jews and not. In reaction to the violent images that have become part of the second intifada, anti-Zionist rabbis have redoubled their efforts to disassociate from Judaism from it. And Jews in general. From the actions of the Israeli armed forces, they have purchased advertising space in English language publications in Europe and North America to denounce the violence, which they unambiguously attribute to the ambitions of the Zionists in creating and perpetuating the State of Israel. At a demonstration organized by the Coalition of American, Arab, and Muslims in February 2002, a leaflet distributed by the Naturi Karta argued that the State of Israel's cruel treatment of the Palestinian people is against the Creator's imperative that we deal justly and kindly with all men. To all our Arab and Islamic brethren around the world, let the message go forth today that your quarrel is not with the Jewish people, the people of the Torah. We stand with you in your suffering. We feel your pain. We are with you. Let there be no more innocent victims, neither Palestinian nor Jew. Let us pray that the Zionist state will, with God's help, soon become a distant and dismal memory. That's a leaflet that was called The Cry. Despite the rather modest numbers, the anti-Zionist activists have been successful in transmitting their message of reconciliation with the Palestinians and of the condemnation of the Israeli military operations to a huge Arab and Muslim audience. They have given interviews to Al Jazeera, which are broadcast throughout the Arab-speaking world, on Iranian television and in countless newspapers and magazines. On the occasion of the holiday of the Purim, which was marked by an outburst of violence in the land of Israel in 2002, anti-Zionists declared, "Purim is a holiday that commemorates the victory over faith over barbarity, of good over evil. It is fitting for us to repudiate the current heresy and violence of Zionism on this day." In several major cities, they burned the flag of Israel, accompanied by the following commentary. "The Zionist experiment has reached its inevitable conclusion. Death tolls mount and no viable solution is in sight. Slowly, the Jewish people are awakening to the reality of Zionism, its rejection of Torah views, of exile and redemption, combined with its aggressive stance toward Gentiles in general and Palestinians in particular. By burning the Israeli flag, we are symbolically declaring that the Israeli state, contrary to its absurd claims, is not representative of the Jewish people. In fact, its denial of our faith and its brutalization of Palestinians renders it antithetical to Judaism. It is the task of world Jewry to remain patriotic citizens of the lands of their dispersion and pursue peace with all men." Zionism calls for a Jewish state not because there must be a Jewish state in and of itself, but because it considers that a Jewish state is the most practical way to reach its goal. To break the covenant entered into Mount Sinai and to turn a holy nation into an earthbound people. As such, Zionism represents a collective evil inclination toward the Jews. So you could really say that, and this is a belief held by many, many Orthodox, you know, Torah-abiding Jews, is that Zionism is actually working actively against Jews. Zionism is actually the single source of the greatest risks to the Jewish people. My opinion is that a lot of these IDF soldiers that wake up to reality and realize what they're doing are the biggest heroes, I would say, of arguably in the world today, because you're coming from a country that is satanic, that, you know, at least the government leadership, not the people, but the leadership is. The Lev Tahor, which is one of the Hasidic groups of Jews most opposed to Zionism, is actually largely made up of former IDF soldiers. Going to the Holocaust, the tragedy of the Shoah, or the Holocaust, calls out for the closest scrutiny of one's own behavior, for individual and collective atonement. It is not an occasion for accusing the executioner, and even less an attempt to explain his behavior by political, ideological, or social factors. The executioner, be he Pharaoh, Amalek, or Hitler, cannot be anything but an agent of divine punishment and undoubtedly cruel means of bringing the Jews to repentance. In like manner, one of the songs sung at the end of Passover meal, Haggadah, reminds those present at the festive table that the deliverance they are celebrating can come from one source alone, divine providence, aka God, and that's from the Shalom Harmon Institute. Following the same logic, only divine providence can explain the catastrophes that have afflicted the Jews, affirmed by Rabbi Wasserman, only a few years before his own death at the hands of the Nazis. His brief text, the Epoch of the Messiah, remains one of the most fundamental sources in the Judaic critique of Zionism. Rabbi Wasserman was fully conscious of the danger that the German National Socialism represented for the Jews, but he saw in it no innovation, no exception to the divine order. We find a similar interpretation in the writings of his German contemporary, Rabbi Schwab, a prominent disciple of Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. Schwab clearly describes the Nazi anti-Jewish legislation as punishment for the Jews' abandonment of the Torah. Quote, God is calling them now, and they make no reply. People whisper to one another with furtive sidelong glance at the forces which God has unleashed upon us for our chastisement, that this is not the time for making accusations. They glance into the harsh distorting mirror held up by the messengers of God and believe that they, that not they, but the others are to blame. End quote. The German rabbi was remarkably prescient. Writing this, he did only a few months after Hitler's ascent to power. He said, quote, God has smitten you measure for measure. The God of history reveals himself in the crisis and chaos of our age. Do my people know this? Only one-tenth will remain, end quote. He held fast to his views even after the Shoah. In a later English translation, he did not see fit to modify the part of his 1934 book that called on the Jews of Germany to repent in the face of impending catastrophe. That, to me, was so powerful. In 1934, this rabbi, Rabbi Schwab, who was seeing what was happening in Germany, he was telling the Jews, saying, repent now. Change your ways now, or else we're going to have some major, major consequences to deal with. And what happened? The Holocaust. The Judaic literature that presents this particular vision of the Shoah is abundant, and it draws on classical sources and begins well before Auschwitz. The political and military interpretation of exile by the Zionists is seen as an important cause of the catastrophe. As Zionism's transgressions was a collective one, so too would be the punishment as a collective, recalling on the responsibility of the Torah sages for the Jewish people as a whole. This was from the book. On the road to Auschwitz, a Jew asked Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Einreich, known as the Shimlauer Rav, why the Blessed One had caused the catastrophe to befall the Jews of Europe. He answered, we are being punished because we did not sufficiently combat the Zionists. For any offense against the Torah, even by an individual, will befall on the community as a whole. This was written after the Shoah. Rabbi Blau, his commentary is no less categorical, even though but more concise. If it were not for the Zionists sinning, the tragedy of Europe would have never happened. Blau firmly opposed the suggestion, widespread among the partisans of Zionism, that the state of Israel existed in the 1930s, it would have been able to absorb the Jews of Europe. He said, this is outright heresy. I repeat that the Holocaust came as a retribution for Zionist sinning. They violated the three O's mentioned by the Talmud as God's orders against working for a Jewish state, and thus brought upon Jewry such a calamity in which Jewish bodies were turned into Nazi soap. In all such matters, what seem to be questions for non-believers are actually answers for us. So, I get it. I mean, if the Holocaust is the way it's been presented in history, if that happened, because I wasn't there, but if everything that was described in history books is what happened, I understand the Jews collectively being like, why? But the pious Jews, the ones that are actually observing the Torah and obeying God's commandments, they know why. It's because the Zionists rose to power and not enough was done. Rabbi Wasserman, I'm sorry, the Jews must not combat their adversaries. The Torah and prayer are our only weapons. Again, the meekness of the Jews, they are supposed to turn the other cheek and pray to God for deliverance, just like the Jews prayed for deliverance from the Egyptians, from Pharaoh. Go back to Exodus. The Jews didn't revolt. They waited patiently and under harsh circumstances for the deliverance of God. Palestine cannot absorb the Jews of Europe. We want only the best of Jewish... this is a bad one. This is the future president of Israel, Chaim Weizmann, said this. Palestine cannot absorb the Jews of Europe. We want only the best of Jewish to come to us. We want only the educated to enter Palestine for the purpose of increasing its culture. The other Jews will have to stay where they are and face whatever fate awaits them. These millions of Jews are dusts on the wheels of history, and they may have to be blown away. We don't want them pouring into Palestine. We don't want Tel Aviv to become another low-grade ghetto. Wow. That is from the future president of Israel basically saying, we only want the good Jews. All you other non, you know, like, you know, Europeanized, secularized Jews, we don't want you. Marak Edelman, a veteran of the revolt, this was the revolt, in World War II, there was a group of Jews that revolted against the Nazis. He continued to reside in Poland, and he actually supports the Palestinian resistance and finds in it many similarities with his own struggle against the Nazis. Quote, "Nothing infuriates Zionists more than the arguments of anti-Zionist Jews who have such a courageous and principled history." I agree. This was a great description from Rabbi Moshe Dov Beck that basically explains how is it that God could have allowed the Holocaust to happen and why. So the story goes, a king had a son who had fallen mortally ill. No doctor in the world could cure him, and the child was quickly approaching death. Suddenly, a man appeared who had promised to cure the lad on the condition that he would be allowed to operate without anesthetic. The father hesitated, but considering the seriousness of his son's condition, gave his permission. He stood outside the operating room behind a glass door through which he could watch the operating operation unseen by his son. The operation began, and the son began to cry out so wretchedly that his father's heart was torn. With each cry, the father shuddered, but after a short moment, he smiled with comfort. His son was being cured. But the son, racked with pain, unable to understand what was happening to him, called out to his father, who did not respond. His fear was that his father had abandoned him, but in reality, the father had simply hidden his face. The Shoah was indeed the cause of the most grievous suffering, but God never abandoned us, nor did he even hide his face. The disease that afflicted us is called secularization. Today, more young people study the Torah than before the Second World War. So in other words, God did this to try to get the Jews to come back to him. And he never abandoned them. The rabbi says he didn't even hide his face. And I agree. But you could, for that metaphor for that story, God just kind of took a step behind the curtain. He's still there, but he's just waiting for you guys to peek around. Rabbi Teitelbaum said, before the coming of the Messiah, the profane state will vanish and no other path will be available. And that's what I think we're witnessing today. The state of Israel is declining. And people say, oh, well, you know, when people call for the end of Israel, they're calling for the mass extinction of Jews. And no, not at all. I mean, communist Russia, the USSR, disappeared without a fired shot. Right? I mean, all these wars and all the Cold War, all that led up to the communist state basically falling apart from within. And if that's possible with communist Russia, it's possible with Zionist Israel. And almost done. This was from Yasser Arafat. We wonder maybe why he died. He said this, "These expressions are priceless examples of the long-standing and abiding relationship between Jews and Arabs reaching back hundreds of years, and enable the entire world to see the stark contrast between the eternal and the beautiful values of Judaism and those embodied in aggressive Zionism. These demonstrations and expressions are of critical importance in enabling the Palestinian people and Arabs worldwide to see this crucial difference so that everybody understands that the actions of the Israeli state do not reflect anything rooted in the traditions, beliefs, and laws of Judaism. This is vital in emphasizing that there is no conflict between Jew and Arab." It's a lot of information. Believe me, I highly recommend this book if you've never read it. But number one, not only did I give you biblical / Torah verses that explicitly forbid everything everything that Israel is doing today, but you heard quotes from rabbis condemning Israel and saying, and not only that, I find it amazing that so many of these rabbis before World War II prophetically predicted exactly what is happening today. I saw it was a Jew that said Israel's has offered only military solutions, but none of them have worked, and yet that's all they continue to offer. The only solution is peace. God wants. Remember, God created all of us. Doesn't matter what our skin color is. Doesn't matter where we're from, who our parents were, what our political ideologies are, what kind of job we have. We are all created in the image of God, and therefore we are all God's children. And I'm hoping and praying that what Israel is doing today is going to lead us to recognizing that fact that we are all equal and in the eyes of God, and we are all loved by God, and thus we must all love each other like God loves us. Thank you for listening. Please share this with your friends and family. Share that book with them. It's one more time. It's 100 explaining 100 years of Jewish opposition to Zionism, written by Yaakov Rabkin. You can find it in paperback on Amazon for, I think it's like less than $10. Great read. It will change your life and then completely alter the way that you look at this Israeli Palestinian conflict. Once again, my name is Neo. Thank you for listening. This has been The Matrix is Real.